Mario Puig is a senior writer and an expert at RotoWire.com. For two decades, the industry's premium fantasy sports resource. Let RotoWire help you win at fantasy football. They have all the draft kit information that you'll need to dominate your league. Get a free 10-day trial at RotoWire.com/free. Mario, how are you?
Hey, Mario.
Hey, guys. Good. How are you doing?
I was good. I was thinking about drafting Antonio Brown first.
No, not really.
But still, this is a problem, man. This guy's going crazy now with the feet, the frostbite, not wanting to play without his helmet, being AWOL. In fact, the Raiders couldn't find him for 24 hours. If you were considering Antonio Brown very early in your fantasy draft, what would you do?
I would have to hold off right now. I don't know what exactly what advice to give because there's no manual for something like this. But he's definitely, you know, unstable. It's like, is it one of those things where they can gloss it over and kind of get him to settle down a little bit? They maybe can, but they might not be able to. It's kind of interesting that they can't seem to be on okay terms with him when it's not even, you know, their rule, it's the league's. You know, you maybe could trick him into at least just getting mad at the league instead of the team and cooperating with the team in the meantime. I don't know. But I'm not going to try to draft him because I wasn't that high on him to begin with. In point per reception leagues, it's one thing. Even with Derek Carr, who I'm not particularly high on, I figured he could get to 100 catches even if he only gets 4 or 5 touchdowns. And if you're getting a point per catch, it doesn't really matter so much. But in standard scoring, if you don't get points for receptions, he was already kind of a problematic pick, I thought, because he'd usually go in the late second in the drafts that I've looked at. And, you know, spending a top 25 pick on a guy who can't score touchdowns, not to assume he couldn't, but I just don't think Carr will throw that many. And then this getting involved, and I just don't know where to leave him. So he's pretty much off my board because I'm sure there's some point in the draft where I'd be willing to take the risk, but there's probably someone else who's willing to take it before me.
Well, you know, I'm interested to know how, and it's a little bit different than Le'Veon Bell, but how did you handle the Le'Veon Bell from a fantasy football draft perspective last year? And again, only because it's uncertainty now. Antonio Brown, who knows what the hell's going to happen. But Le'Veon Bell was kind of like, well, you know, do you take a risk? Maybe he's back in week 3, but turns out he wasn't back at all. How'd you handle that situation last year?
Well, I think Bell was a lot more of a blind side because I guess that might have been like what should have been his third year in a row of being in that exact situation. And the previous times he showed up right before the season started, and it just seemed like he was going to do it again. But with Brown, we're at least getting, you know, a bit of a warning ahead of time that this could get weird. It already is weird, but it, you know, you got to wonder how weird it can really get if this is where we're at in early August. So at least we're not, you know, learning about this September 2nd or something like that. At least we're getting it out in the air now. And it's more concerning. There's a lot more reason to be alarmed ahead of time in this case because with Bell, you at least had the prior history to look at and convince yourself it would go the same way. And in this case, it just seems all bad, really.
Mario Puig is with us from RotoWire.com and RotoWire Magazine. In fantasy football, unlike pro football these days, we have a greater importance on the running back position for sure. And yet you talk about question marks, Ezekiel Elliott, Melvin Gordon, Todd Gurley's knee, a lot of question marks. What's your advice to people that will most likely be drafting a first round running back?
Yeah, it's a lot more complicated than it was just a couple of weeks ago. It's the Zeke holdout. It's the Melvin Gordon holdout. And it's the Gurley knee has been a problem for a while, as you said, but even like Damian Williams, who was a pretty popular target in the second round, third round, he's had his hamstring issue. So it's turned into a minefield awfully quickly, and there's a couple ways you could try to counter that, I guess. You could embrace the risk and, you know, just really wing it, assume the best, assume that Dallas will pay Elliott, assume that Gordon will, you know, give in with his holdout and show up. The Le'Veon Bell situation from last year shows, in my opinion, that we can't really take a whole lot for granted anymore in those cases. So you can also try to pay up a little bit more for other running backs and, you know, avoid the risk that way. Maybe target David Johnson if you have the 4th pick and Saquon, Alvin Kamara, and Christian McCaffrey are all gone. You could take someone like Le'Veon Bell or Nick Chubb, especially now that Duke Johnson's out of Cleveland. Maybe you take Nick Chubb a little earlier. You could also just go after the receivers because as much as, you know, we want that 35-point running back, of course, every week, but a guy like Julio Jones, Michael Thomas isn't going to hurt your team. Maybe you're not going to get as much high points upside week to week as some of the running backs can give you, but you're also not going to end up with a zero with one of those guys like you might. Not to say I have any insight on how it's going to go with Elliott or Gordon, but with Bell happening the way he did last year, it could be another zero for all we know. I don't really expect that, but it's not like I saw the Bell situation coming either. So, yeah, you can go wide receiver heavy, and if you're, especially if you're in a league where you got the free agent bidding as opposed to the waiver system, you can kind of just pick up running backs if somebody gets hurt or if, you know, if Zeke ends up sitting out, maybe week one, it's somebody like Alfred Morris or whatever, Tony Pollard. If they don't get picked in your league now, maybe you can just pay up with your free agent bidding to get them later. That's certainly a strategy a lot of people try to take. But the honest answer is I don't think anybody can know for sure what's going on right now, and everybody's kind of they all feel like they're on thin ice right now when they're in the early draft and they got themselves on the clock and you're at the third or fourth or fifth pick and you know a couple weeks ago I would have just taken Elliott here, and now there's just no real easy answer to what should be done.
Well, you mentioned David Johnson in the fourth pick, and I happen to have the fourth pick in our company draft last year. And I took David Johnson, and needless to say, it was I wasn't happy. Not his fault. Bad offense. But,
right.
But I know things like that can happen. What about some real ultra sleeper picks? I mean, guys like Sony Michel is one who I think is going to be a feature back this year for the Patriots, and there are several others out there that I think have a chance that may be overlooked. I'm not saying in the first round, but they could give you potentially good first-round numbers. We saw what guys like him did in the postseason last year. And when he was healthy at the end of the season, six touchdowns in the postseason, six in the last, like, six games, I think, of the regular season. So where do you stand on the real sleepers, guys that you could maybe take in the fourth round but might give you first-round-type numbers?
Yeah, so in the fourth round and later, I mean, sometimes you'll see some names that you already know. Like sometimes a Leonard Fournette will fall that far. He's got his issues, of course, but it's one of those things. Even if he's only fully healthy for 1 year in an eight-year NFL career, for all we know, that could be this season. And sometimes he falls into the early fourth round. I certainly believe in the talent. I don't know what to make of his work ethic or health or whatever, but the guy was pretty convincing at LSU. And even as a rookie, I was pretty convinced with him. Sometimes Devontae Freeman will fall into that range, and Tevin Coleman left Atlanta this offseason. They didn't really replace him. The guys that they got in the backfield behind Devontae Freeman I don't think are very good. Safe to say they're nowhere near Freeman's level, and yet that Atlanta offense should be pretty good this year. It wouldn't be surprising if Matt Ryan threw for 5,000 yards. They play in a dome, I think, something like 14 games this year, 13 games, 14 games. So they could be high-scoring, and Freeman could get in on it to a pretty big extent. Otherwise, a little lower, I mentioned Tevin Coleman, his former teammate. I think him and Matt Breida in San Francisco are both nice values. And Coleman's had some injury issues, and Breida was pretty convincing last year. But it also might be a lot like Freeman and Coleman in Atlanta, where they in San Francisco they got the same coach who was running that show back there. So you can get Coleman sometimes as late as like the sixth or seventh round, actually. And at least up until recently, you could get Breida in the 12th, 13th. And it's Jarek McKinnon's knee is being problematic right now. So it seems like at least one of Coleman or Breida is going to be good this year because that Shanahan offense usually puts up numbers. I think it's worth it to get both of them and then just kind of let the situation sort itself out. And, you know, sixth rounder and a 13th rounder for maybe a top 10 running back output over the course of the year is a decent exchange rate, I think.
Mario Puig is with us from rotowire.com. Final question for me. If you're in a 10-team or a 12-team league and everybody is taking running backs, at what point do you kind of maybe pick six or pick eight? Do you maybe go, well, it'd be better for me to go get a receiver like D-Hop? And by the way, along those lines, what is your favorite receiver at this point?
There's a lot to like at receiver, especially at the top of the draft. I will say I'm probably lower on guys like Devontae Adams and Michael Thomas than most people. It's not like I expect them to be bad this year or anything. It's just you usually see them go in the same range as Juju Smith-Schuster who I am higher on than most people. I think there's a good case to rank Juju first among receivers, and yet you'd sometimes see him falling to something like the 15th, 18th pick. I'm very high on Odell Beckham as a talent, but he's a little bit more of an injury worry than someone like Hopkins or Juju Smith-Schuster, but I think Odell Beckham is maybe the best receiver in the league when he's fully healthy, and I definitely believe in Baker Mayfield, so I'm high on him. But yeah, there's definitely, I mean, a lot of people believe in taking receivers as soon as the fifth pick, the sixth pick. You might have heard of the zero running back theory that's out there. Those people are going receiver very early, and then they just try to catch up at running back by hitting the waiver wire, hitting the free agent bidding when the other running backs who go in the first and second round get hurt, which usually happens. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago, David Johnson broke his wrist in week one. Sometimes things like that happen, and sometimes the backup's pretty good, too. So it's definitely a valid strategy to go receiver earlier than some other people. Just because it's a little bit against the grain doesn't mean it has no merit to it.
Yeah. Mario Puig, a senior writer from RotoWire.com and RotoWire Magazine. Thanks so much, man. It's a great start. We're going to ponder these things. Thanks for coming on.